This is Positive Parenting. Parenting expertise and advice from best-selling parenting author and national newspaper columnist, Mr. Dad, Armin Brott.
Hello and welcome to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. Caitlyn Jenner's recent and very public transition from Bruce to Caitlyn has made gender nonconformity more visible and talked about than ever before. However, despite the recent media frenzy, there are few, if any, guidelines for parents of gender nonconforming children. How can parents support their children in a world that may not immediately understand or accept them? Clearly, we need some major help to get us through the rapidly changing cultural, medical, and legal landscape of gender and identity. And the source of that help is Diane Arensav, the author of a new book called The Gender Creative Child. And she has an approach that she believes will help us with all of this. And she's going to be explaining the interconnected effects of biology and nurture and culture and help us explore why gender itself can be fluid instead of binary. Diane has more than three decades of pioneering work with children and families, and the bottom line is that she encourages caregivers to listen to each child, to learn their particular needs, and to support their quest for a true gender self. I'm Armin Brott. We'll be talking about gender and identity and sexual orientation and a lot of other topics that all have to do with supporting and loving children who don't fit into a typical box one way or the other when Positive Parenting continues right after this.
More with Mr. Dad, Armin Brott, after this from the MrDad.com radio network.
My son Casey was a bright, fearless 20-year-old with a boundless future ahead of him. But in the blink of an eye, he was gone. While out riding a skateboard, Casey fell. He was not wearing a helmet. Our whole family wishes he was. It could have saved his life. I'm Captain Kevin Raffelli of the San Mateo Police Department. Parents, encourage your kids to strap on a helmet every time they jump on a bike, scooter, or skateboard. Think of my son Casey and use your head. Put a helmet on. It could save your life.
A message from the Consumer Product Safety Commission.
I walk and you drive. So let's make a deal. I'll watch for you and cross the street safely. You watch for me and stop. Think of the impact we can make.
A message from the Federal Highway Administration.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. My guest for this part of today's show is Diane Arensaft, who is the author of The Gender Creative Child, Pathways for Nurturing and Supporting Children Who Live Outside Gender Boxes. Diane, thanks for coming back on the show.
And thank you so much for having me. It's delightful.
Let's talk about who exactly gender creative children are and what that means.
I would begin by saying gender creative children are actually all of our children, because every single child is putting together their gender in a unique way. But if I break it down, I'm specifically talking about kids who defy gender boxes. They either say, guess what, I'm not the gender you think I am, or they say, you know what, I don't really like the rules about gender where I live, so I'm going to do it differently.
Without using those words, though, probably, right?
Yeah, and sometimes they don't use words at all. They show you in action rather than in speech that's their intent.
The book is aimed at parents, and other adults. But it seems like, looked at some studies on this, that kids themselves can be among the harshest enforcers of gender roles, even more so than adults sometimes.
I think that's absolutely right about children, but if you go back to the old musical South Pacific, that you've got to be taught to hate is one of the songs, that children learn that policing from their elders, and then they impose it on their peers. And one of the reasons it gets imposed, particularly during childhood, is it is a time of rules and regulation, and our culture has set up some very firm rules about gender. And then we have our gender transgressors, many of them being the children themselves, saying, I don't like those rules. So you have both a push and a push back. So indeed, some of the enforcers will be other children. And the other thing is for both children and adults, if you don't understand something, it might make you nervous, and you might say, stop it, instead of, oh, let me understand this.
Now, I don't know if we're going to agree on this particular thing, but it confuses me sometimes, or bothers me sometimes, I guess, when people are using the words gender and sex interchangeably. Do you use them differently?
Completely different.
Okay, thank you.
I think we're on the same page.
Okay, because I think people are afraid to use the word sex. I mean, at least the way that I understand it, sex is biology and gender is behavior. Could we sum it up that way?
It's a good way to sum it up, except gender also lies in biology. So what gender you are going to end up being may very well be in part biologically determined as well as socially determined, both by nature, by nurture and culture. But the problem is, if we really break it down, sex is what we say a child is when they come out and we look at the child and we say, you're a boy or a girl, or we can't tell. That is considered the sex of the baby, usually based on chromosomes, genitalia, and most importantly, what we see. That's not the same as gender. Gender is how you socially and culturally position yourself as either a boy or a girl or something else. And when we say they're both the same, we have fuzzy vision.
Yeah, and it's such a part of our human nature, I think. I mean, the very first thing you hear somebody's had a baby, the very first thing you want to know is boy or girl. I mean, we need to know how to categorize people.
And it makes us anxious when we can't. So I was just this afternoon at a baby blessing party. Instead of a baby shower, it was a baby blessing for a baby to be. And the parents do not know the gender of the baby, and they don't want to, or I should say the sex of the baby, I should say, and they don't want to. So everybody, of course, was trying to guess. And then there was another young mom, a new mom with a very young baby, and one of the older people, so a grandmother age person, just said, I can't tell if that's a boy or a girl. I have to know. Why do we need to know? This is a four-month-old baby. What difference does it make if it's a boy or a girl? But I think we've always depended on gender as bedrock, the way we can know who someone is more than anything else. And so if you take that away from us, or it gets a little, or we thought we knew and then we found out we didn't, we get anxious.
Do you think that it's healthy for there to be dominant roles, that there a male role and a female role, and then something that's a minority, whatever that is? I just don't know what to think sometimes when I read about or hear about couples who raise their child without any kind of identity. And it just seems like, you know, they're supposed to be men and women, and we're built a particular way so that we can breed.
Mm-hmm. I would say what's healthy is gender diversity. And under gender diversity, there certainly will be the categories male and female. And in my book, we don't want to get rid of it at all. We just want to open it up for more categories so that each person, and particularly when you're a kid, can feel free to place themselves wherever they want, either along a gender spectrum or what I call a gender web that they weave themselves, so that those aren't the only two choices, that you can only be male or female, and that you can, and if you're male, you have to do it one way, and if you're female, you have to do it another way.
Well, is that something that that kids need to develop on their own, that they should independently decide, you know, I don't quite fit into being like mom or like dad, I'm kind of somewhere in the middle, or do we need to expose them to all the possibilities and let them make a choice?
That's a really good question, and I think what you're asking is the nature-nurture question. At the end of the day, I think it's up to the children to weave their own gender web. As I said, based on three major threads, nature, nurture, and culture. But they live in a culture, and from the culture, they'll learn how things are done in their culture about gender and how gender is thought about. When it becomes a problem, is when it's no longer learning, but police action, so that there's rules and there's no flexibility about how to do it and how to either express your gender or even declare what your gender is. So my basic kind of tenet is, if you want to know a child's gender, it's not for us, that means the adults, to tell, but for the children to say. And that if we listen, they'll tell us who they are and how they want to do their gender, and we can absolutely expose them to a lot of possibilities.
You know, I didn't want to get into anything political today, but it's just...
It's hard not to, huh?
It is hard not to. And just want to get your take on this. I mean, I try to be as open-minded as I can possibly be, but I'm thinking that people on both sides have just had a knee-jerk reaction. What's missing from some of this is an actual discussion mm-hmm. about comfort. I've got three daughters, and I'm not concerned about having somebody who identifies as a boy or as a girl, but who is biologically a boy. I think that's going to be such a rarity that that's not even an mm-hmm. issue. But I think that because gender-questioning kids or transgender kids are a small minority, there's the risk of making a lot of other people really uncomfortable. And do the rights of the people who are a small minority trump the comfort levels of the people who are the majority?
I would have to say on this one, yes. But I would hope that we could get beyond rights to understanding. And it is my own perception that many of the people who are frightened or upset about the notion of opening up restrooms to people based on the gender they identify with rather than the sex they were assigned at birth have never really sat down with a transgender person and talked to them and learned about their life. And what I would say is we are creating great harm to transgender people, and I can specifically speak for the children, when we don't give them the freedom to use the restrooms and the facilities that match the gender they know themselves to be. For them, it's a tremendous risk. That goes way beyond discomfort
yeah.
to walk into a bathroom that doesn't match who they are and have people yell at them and say, get out of here.
Right.
And what we have is a number of kids don't go to the bathroom at all at school. And
right.
they end up sick because of
yeah.
it.
Talking with Diane Ehrensaft, who's the author of The Gender Creative Child, Pathways for Nurturing and Supporting Children Who Live Outside Gender Boxes. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will keep talking to Diane.
In 1977, in Johannesburg, South Africa, an 8-year-old boy picked up the game of golf from his father. By the age of 9, he was already outplaying him. The odds of that same boy then making it to the U.S. and European pro golf tours? 1 in 7 million. The odds of the Big Easy winning the Open Championship once and the U.S. Open Championship twice? 1 in 780 million. The odds of this professional golfer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Ernie Els encourages you to learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared.
It's like tiny nails in the air poke my lungs.
I start to cough.
Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
Today, 1 out of 13 children suffer from some form of asthma, accounting for nearly one-third of all emergency room visits.
I feel like I'm choking.
It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest.
A little whistle sound comes out when I breathe.
But while your child may suffer from asthma, asthma doesn't have to make your child suffer. There are simple ways you can prevent your child's next attack. To learn more, call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS. That's 1-866-662-8822. Log on to www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Diane Ehrensaft, who's the author of The Gender Creative Child, Pathways for Nurturing and Supporting Children Who Live Outside Gender Boxes. All right, so let's get beyond the politics and talk about the practical. How does a parent know, I guess the word worry shouldn't even come up here at all, but parents are going to worry. I think, because of this whole thing about boy or girl, if you have a boy who likes to wear high heels or a girl who, it's less of an issue for girls, I think, than it is for boys who are wearing high heels or lipstick. A girl who wants to play with trucks, nobody really questions that so much. So how do parents know when there is something going on that they might explore, or do they just leave the child alone to develop any way he or she chooses?
I would say, in terms of your questions, those are the vital questions. Do you leave the child alone, or do you let them know that you see something going on? And I think the answer is both. So the way you leave a child alone is to not impose your dreams for them about gender, but let them have their own dreams about gender. And going back to that, the old record album, Free to Be You and Me, that there is the freedom to both explore and declare who you are. And that's where it's good for parents to leave kids alone, to have that freedom. Where it is good for parents not to leave kids alone is when the kids are trying to tell them something, it's really important to listen. So, for example, there are a number of kids who, at a very early age, will start saying, as soon as they can start speaking, you all have it wrong. They might say, me not boy, me girl. And you don't want to leave that alone. You want to listen to it and understand what that means, if that's your child. Because if you don't listen, a child will think, are they deaf? I'm trying to tell them something. I'm trying to say, for example, me not boy, me girl. And they keep calling me boy, and I'm starting to feel frustrated because I'm not being listened to. So they might up the ante some and get distraught and turn up the amp so somebody will listen. And if you start listening early, it makes all the difference.
Well, if you have a child who's saying, me not boy, me girl, or the other way around, doesn't that imply a certain intuitive understanding of what boys and girls are?
Absolutely. That's right, because you have to wait till your second year of life till you get it. Oh, there are these two categories. And I'm living in a world where everybody's calling me a boy, and they're calling my sister a girl, and they're dressing her differently than me. So you already have learned by your second year of life the basics about gender. You don't know that it's permanent. It's kind of like frogs can turn into princes. So girls can turn into boys, and boys can turn into girls. But you're learning two things. You're learning that there's some categories here, and you're also learning that everybody's thinking you're this particular category.
All right. So, again, let's kind of move towards the practical stuff. Are these questions that parents can handle on their own, or do we need to be looking for some sort of help if things are not falling into the typical binary system?
I would say it depends on the parent as to whether you need some help or can do it on your own. In The Gender Creative Child, I devote a lot of time talking about parents who need no other guidance than their own intuition, and I call them gender creative parents who raise gender creative children because they just have it in their bones how to listen to their child and respond. And at the same time, even in the best of times, it can be confusing, it can be anxiety-provoking, and you can really worry, is my child going to be okay? Okay, is there something wrong with my child? Because the other thing I talk about in The Gender Creative Child is my profession, which is psychology, mental health, has not been so great in giving parents a sense of confidence and resilience about raising gender-creative children, because the message had been traditionally that if your child is showing some gender nonconformity, there's probably something wrong. And the new model, and it's the model I work from, which is called the gender affirmative model, says just the opposite. If your child is showing gender nonconformity, not conforming either to the rules or to their the sex assignment on their birth certificate, then they are gender diverse, and there's nothing wrong with them. But we want to help them be the gender that's most authentic for them, and that's not so easy, because where there are things wrong is in the culture. That the culture doesn't take so kindly to that, and as you so aptly pointed out, there's an easier road for girls who want to play with trucks than for a boy who wants to wear a tutu, because we actually privilege boy things more than girl things in our culture, unfortunately. And it's not an easy road for any child if somebody's saying, you can't do that. And so sometimes you need some support and help from a mental health professional. Where I work at the Child and Adolescent Gender Center Clinic at Benioff Children's Hospital at UCSF, there's a number of families who bring us our young children. They're doing a fine job letting their children be who they are, but it's the grandparents who are really giving them a hard time, saying what you're doing is all wrong. So if they come to our clinic and go back and tell their parents, the grandparents, the professionals at UCSF said, we're doing okay, everything quiets down, and that's the reason they come.
Huh. And we're still, in a way, talking about a binary system, though. And so I'm kind of curious about the kids. You mentioned several points in the book about fluidity.
Mm-hmm. You know, the children are leading the way on this so much that I think that the children just being born now are growing and will grow up in a world where gender is going to look radically different than the world that I was born into. That the notion that there are only two genders is, for many youth, becoming quite passé. In the book I talk about, we have apples, oranges, and fruit salad. And the fruit salad are the group of kids who are mixing up gender, both in who I am, male, female, or other, and how I want to do my gender, like I'm mixing up a gender mosaic and throwing everything into the pot. So I do believe that there is going to continue to be a real challenge to the gender binary as we have known it.
You know, I'm just kind of curious, you know this significantly better than most people probably, but can you give us a little bit of a statistical breakdown of roughly how many kids or the percentage of kids that are affected by gender questioning or gender fluidity or not fitting into a category one way or the other?
In terms of the statistics on gender nonconforming kids, what I can say definitively is we do not have statistics. We don't have good statistics. What we have are estimates for the number of children who will end up being transgender, and that I'm defining specifically as being the opposite gender to the one everybody thought they were. And we have estimates that go from 0.05% of the population to 5% of the population. We really don't know. What I would say, it's more than we thought, because so many children go underground. They don't let anybody know that that's who they really are, because they get a message it's not okay. In terms of the number of kids who are questioning gender, exploring gender, stretching it beyond two boxes, I would say from all of my colleagues and myself that the numbers are going up astronomically. And we say it because we have no space in our clinics to see all the kids and families who are coming in to get support. So it's probably in our own clinic, it's tripled in the last 12 months. And I think that's true around the country. So we can say the kids are coming out of the woodwork. We have a new generation of kids. I wish I could give you a number. I can't. But what I would say is it's a lot more than we thought.
Okay. Well, we'll have to leave it there. Diane Ehrensapt is the author of The Gender Creative Child, Pathways for Nurturing and Supporting Children Who Live Outside Gender Boxes. Diane, thanks again for being on the show. Always something thought-provoking.
And thanks so much for having me.
People have all kinds of excuses for not saving energy. I didn't plug it in. I'll turn it off later. It's not my music. It's just one phone charger. So we don't have those Energy Star appliances. So that old window leaks. How much energy and money could the new ones really save? Maybe it's time to stop making excuses and start doing some simple things to save the energy and resources we can.
Because a little here and a little there can add up to a lot later, and you just never know what people will need in the future. My name is
Sarah, and I'm going to get started today.
We can all help save more energy for tomorrow. What's your excuse? For more energy-saving tips that also save money, visit loseyourexcuse.gov/parents. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy, the Ad Council, and this station.
Hey there, welcome back to Positive Parenting. I'm Armin Brott. Time for a Parents at Play segment. You know, if you're a fan of superheroes, life is looking pretty good right now. This week, we take a look at some fun toys that are going to keep you connected to your favorite heroes and villains during those long spells between movie releases. Big Figs from Jack's Pacifics. These 19-inch figures are ripped straight from the new Warner Brothers film Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice, and they are stunning. If you're a collector, you'll probably want to put these Big Figs on a high shelf somewhere and never touch them, which would be too bad because they're really fun to play with. We had a chance to review Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman, and the opportunities for imaginative play are endless. Each of these figures is highly detailed and has 7 points of articulation and a cloth cape, at least in the case of Superman and Batman. They're for ages 3 and up and retail for about $35 a piece. You can find out more at Jax.com. Justice League figures from Schleich. The Justice League is DC's answer to Marvel's Avengers, and while they've been a little slower getting to the big and small screens, they're catching up quickly. Schleich, which makes gorgeously detailed animal figurines, including dragons and other mythical beasts, has created a line of just as gorgeously detailed Justice League characters. They're available individually or in pretty much any combination. One set of small figures feature Batman and Harley Quinn, who, if you don't already know, is Joker's girlfriend and one of Batman's adversaries. She's been in the comic books and animated series, but will be making her first live-action appearance in the forthcoming Suicide Squad film. Another set comes with 7 of the founding members of the League: Aquaman, Batman, Cyborg, The Flash, Green Lantern, Superman, and Wonder Woman. All of the figures are beautifully rendered, solidly crafted, and great to play with. For ages 4 and up, and I mean up all the way up until grandfather years, prices vary widely depending on the set that you're getting, and there's more info at Schleich-S.com, and that's S-C-H-L-E-I-C-H. Marvel Avengers RC Rollover Rumbler from Jack's Pacific. If you've seen Captain America Civil War, you may be feeling the need to side with the Cap or with Iron Man, but with this two-sided remote-controlled vehicle, there is no need to choose. Each side is decorated with images and colors from either Team Red or Team Blue. You start off as Iron Man, and when you get tired of his sarcasm and inflated ego, you can flip it over and continue as Captain America. And when you're sick and tired of Steve Rogers brooding and pouting, you can flip back to the billionaire. The multifunction 2.4 gigahertz remote lets you barrel straight ahead, flip, roll, jump, or do 360-degree sprints indoor or out and on almost any non-smooth surface. It's a real blast for parents or kids and is going to keep you busy and entertained for hours. The only downside is that you're going to need 10 AA batteries, which aren't included. The Rumbler is for ages 4 and up and retails for under $48. More at Jax.com. You can get a lot more reviews of games and toys for you and your family to do together at parentsatplay.com. We'll be back next week with another Parents at Play column or an Ask Mr. Dad column. Until then, I'm Armin Brott.
Thanks for listening to Positive Parenting. You can get more information on today's show and what we're working on in the weeks ahead at MrDad.com. While you're there, visit the MrDad.com gift shop with everything you need to help you become the dad or mom you want to be. Positive Parenting is a production of the MrDad.com radio network. Now, go be a great parent.